straight to the exhibit full of MSX machines, because that is also very colorful and distracting. And rare, especially get the gay by, and I will begin to walk around. It will be like an Infocom game. You can say it's to the foggy me as he walks around. Go west, go west, go north, south, look, pick up,
get way, take,
get lamp.
Uh-oh, I think a non-radio is misbehaving again at the moment.
So now I'm at the exhibit of David Henderson from Tempe, Arizona. He is an expert at the 6502. And so he has on display an Atari 130XE and an Apple IIe. Commodore 128, a Rockwell AIM-65. So all those systems I just mentioned, probably a basic ROM.
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, it has a really neat glowy red display.
Yeah.
And it's just fine, and you have to code that. You have to code with just limited to...
Right, and that was a form of an early development system for the 6502, Rockwell's solution to the problem of being able to teach engineers and people using their products, using 6502s in their products, hopefully purchased from Rockwell as well, since they were a second source.
Okay, I didn't know that. Thank you. And then discussing these machines with him, standing right to the left of me, if I snuck over there and shoved the phone in their faces, you'll hear a conversation between Leonard Tramiel. I always mispronounce his name. I even mispronounce his name
there
to his face. It's so funny.
Other parties in this conference.
Welcome, party. Yesterday I walked up to him and I was like, "Hello, Leonard." and he's talking with Gil Hurd, the Commodore 128 guy. Then to the left of me, I see a bunch of IBM PCs. So here, one of these is. I'm gonna go ahead and connect to the BBS that they have running here live. So I'm in ProCom right now. I'm sitting in front of an IBM XT Model 286. That's weird, because I thought that would be a 80. But that's what it says, IBM Personal Computer XT Model 286, as opposed to 80. And it has an EGA screen, that real IBM enhanced color display.
Hello? Hello?
Feeling serious. They had a bunch of the IBM XT-based faces left, and this is a way to use up the stock that they had.
Yeah, because I was actually curious about that, why it wasn't just simply an IBM AT.
No, yeah, it was, so the Pareto theory is that they used those cases and then used them up, so they designed a motherboard around it.
Uh-huh.
And then we have the IBM AT, which is the first 286 that they released. Interesting little fact is the XT-286 has zero weight state RAM in it, so it's actually a little faster than the AT.
Oh, wow.
Functionally speaking, even though they're the same clock speed. And then, we loaded them up with a bunch of games for people to play, and then we also decided, since FD over here, to set up a BBS. And he can talk about the phone setup then from here.
Yeah, so we have a 40 because you have to run, so you have to run one instance of the application per node. And since DOS natively is, a single tasking operating system, DevView gives you preemptive multi-talk. And so one for, and those connect to, it's the carrier access 8600 channel bank that then connects to an asterisk box over T1. And basically that provides the telephone network here. And then from there, the asterisk box trunks to my home setup over an IAX trunk, an IP trunk. And that's how we get to the public telephone number.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
I know that on the non-radio, there are lots of listeners here to telephony and that type of thing. So especially if they come out very interesting.
All right. Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And,
stick to keep it back on.
Oh, no.
Either way, we're recording this.
Okay. Oh, it is recording now. Nice. Okay, now I'm making my way over to the Quake exhibit. And so we have five machines, various wrist machines, like the Sun Ultra 60, and there's a Silicon Graphic O2. They're all connected into a big IBM server, so we can have five people playing multi-user Quake at the same time.
Cool.
And a guy running the game, which then streaming on a non-rig, which has at any given time about 10 listeners. So I could share with the list of it is about.
Sure.
All right. So this, you guys set up the
network, honestly.
You're right. 2, 3, 4. Yeah, five machines. And at any given time yesterday, it was packed. Mm-hmm. There were always five people shooting each other, which was really exciting that it had that much popularity. That at this point,
but the real question is, can you hear it playing Nine Inch Nails in the background?
Oh yeah, you can sort of hear it. Yeah. And you definitely see the NIN whenever you pick up the little box. Yeah.
Radio listeners, on the 16th of June, 2019, SDF will celebrate 32 years of operation.
Let's see.
Plans for celebrating and promoting SDF 32 and the 50th anniversary of the Unix operating system. Let us know on Mastodon. The best idea will win.
We also have... There's an Enigma machine here.
Oh, cool. How many rotor model?
Yeah, there's an Enigma machine here where you can type in your code and it takes the encrypted letters that you're supposed to then send. This is the machine that Turing defeated.
Right, it was the German method of encryption during the Second World War. Is it a three-rotor or five-rotor model? It'll have like three or five code wheels on it. You type.
Oh, okay, let me ask. For the Enigma machine, how many code wheels does it have inside? Because I've heard it could either be a three-wheel design or a five-wheel design.
Right.
It looks like this one's three wheels, because I see three.
Yeah, and then, of course, it also has a plug board hookup of some sort, as I recall. It also is part of setting it up for generating, you know, coding or decoding.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, wow.
You have all five.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You don't.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I know.
Right?
So they also have an Apollo guidance computer here. And then at 1 p.m. Pacific time will be a panel discussion on the Apollo guidance computer.
Cool. I know there's a lot of interest due to the anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission.
Oh, what was that?
I know there's a lot of interest in the Apollo guidance computer, especially as of late because of the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I guess it was the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
So I'm making my way over to the Big Pictures exhibit.
Hello, Basic. Oh, it's been well. So I'm actually doing the same thing I did yesterday, but this time it's being archived.
Okay. So for the record.
Yeah, yeah. So I was wondering if you could speak to our users about what your exhibit is.
Oh, sure. So my exhibit is basically video playback on a Commodore FET and a Commodore 64, and I'm using a Raspberry Pi to do the hard work of that. The Raspberry Pi is essentially acting like a media server for the C64. It's a simple data protocol between the two through the user port. So the C64 can request a list of videos to play, can request to play a certain video, and then once the video is actually playing, we load a small loader program on the 64 FET, and then it requests individual frames to be displayed. And essentially what happens is the Raspberry Pi decodes video and converts the frame rate to the right frame rate, and then converts the resolution. And in the case of the C64, it converts it down to a, I believe it's a 160 by 200 bitmap with 16 colors. And on the FET, it actually takes 8x8 pixel blocks and converts it to FET characters for display.
Yes.
And cool. In most cases, it takes the raw images, and then the client computer reads them in as quickly as possible and displays it on the screen. On the floor, we get about 6 frames per second going through the user port, and on the FET, it tops out at about 15 to 16 FPS.
Okay, thanks. So, nice.
Yeah.
And in order to determine which character in from PETSky most closely represents that block of portion of the image, it's using a discrete cosine transform.
Yeah, that's right. It uses a discrete cosine transform. So basically, you take 8x8 block of pixels and you convert that to a set of spatial frequencies. So basically, there are frequencies in the x and y directions of that, and then every PETSky character gets a little signature based on that, and then every block of the image you convert to its own signature.
Yeah.
And then you compare those signatures.
Yeah.
And the one that has the closest match ends up being visually very close, and also it is a good performance. It's insensitive to shifting one pixel to the left, one pixel to the right.
Oh, yeah.
Like so if you had a vertical line and you shift it to the left, for example, if you just compared pixels, you would think that was not a match because it wouldn't match any pixels. But in the case of the DCT, it actually would match that.
Yeah. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And so that was Exhibit 31, Vintage Video, with Michael Hill, a.k.a. BitPixer. and he's here every year at Vintage Computer Festival. It was actually his suggestion that I exhibited, and so now here I am as an exhibitor. Thank you. And it looks like our time is about up, so I'm going to make my way back to the SDS booth.
Okay, Froggy Me, thanks for walking around and talking to people. It's kind of interesting.
And I think during the next break, which will be the next break on the non-radio, that is, which will be, I think, 4 to 5 Pacific, I will go talk with the Living Computer Museum people.
Cool. Hopefully everything will work out for that, and we'll hear you in a few hours.
All right, thank you.
I think we're about ready to get preempted by some dubious goals. Thanks, Froggy Me.
Yeah, welcome. right
I wish I could be there, but it's great that you're there and representing SDF and kind of giving us a brief rundown of what's going on there.
Well, of course. It's been a lot of fun. And right as I walked up to the terminal, I saw it scroll the big message. And so to everyone out there listening, I'll talk to you later.
I think we're about ready to start Dubious Goals Committee in another 20 seconds or so. And I'm going to go ahead and mute my mic, and I'll just hang out on the conference bridge until the next non-radio block for Festival West occurs. Talk to everyone.